I think that's on. Okay. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Senator Findley?
Senator Findley, present by video.
Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner? Senator Wagner? Vice Chair Boquist?
Senator Boquist, present by telephone in the snow.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Burdick, present by video by in the snow. Okay, today we have a informational meeting on pass-through entities from the Legislative Revenue Office. The reason I wanted to do this is we're going to have things before our committee, whether it's reconnect or looking at possible changes to the pass-through system. We will have these on our agenda a little bit later in the session. So I thought this would be a good backgrounder for us to get ready for some of the issues we'll be facing. So Chris.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So with you today is Kyle Easton. He handles the income tax, and a lot of this, or all of this taxation, shows up through the personal income tax system. So I see he's on the screen, so he will be walking. I think he's going to share his screen and walk through a presentation for you.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, I have what I have for you today is some background. It'll start first with just a general ground, kind of a groundwork for pass-through taxation and how that flows through into the personal income tax system. And then from there, I'll step through a policy Oregon has related to pass-through income, the pass-through reduced rates. So hopefully we'll get a little background on just pass-through taxation in general before getting into some of the more details of Oregon's reduced rate policy for pass-throughs, for certain types of income from pass-throughs. So there's a slide deck in the meeting materials on OLS. I'll go ahead and attempt to share my screen here, but you can follow along on OLS as well. Okay, so hopefully that's shown up on the full screen. You're seeing the full amount here. So again, the idea here is just to start with the overview of the pass-through entity. So I have a few slides on that to give you some sense of, well, how does the business taxation flow through the personal income taxes? And to give some sense of, well, how many taxpayers actually have some of this business income? And from there, then we'll get into the more details of the pass-through entities. But in terms of business entity types, I thought I'd start describing the entities that flow through into the personal income tax and then what goes into the corporate income and excise tax, because that's kind of an important distinction there. But on the personal income tax side of things, we'll often hear the term sole proprietorship, a partnership, and S-corp will generally be described as the pass-throughs. And then you may also hear limited liability company, right, an LLC. And an LLC is a type of entity, but from a tax perspective, they're going to show up on the tax return as potentially a sole proprietor, partnership, or even in some cases as a C corp. So they pay their taxes in the corporate income and excise tax. So LLCs can be a little unique in how that tax flows through into Oregon. But in general, you're going to see the partnerships and the S-corps are going to be these pass-through entities that will flow right into Oregon as well. And the sole proprietorships, again, will be on the personal income taxes. One other thing to note is that a partnership, of course, in some cases can have corporate partners of that partnership, in which case that partnership income could end up going through the corporate income and excise tax as well. And then the corporate income and excise tax also covers the C-corporations. So that's some of the distinction there, but you really do, we do get business entities can pay taxes through the personal income tax system or the corporate income tax system, depending upon how they're organized. That's kind of the takeaway from this initial slide here. But in terms of a high level concept, for a pass-through business. So how does that work? How does that get into the personal income tax system? And the concept here is you have business entities. So if we're using the partnership or the S-Corp as the example, this business entity has business income, and then they have business expenses. And what you're left with there is going to be business profit, which could, or it could also be a loss. And that's important there. It could be a business income or a loss. But that amount is then passed through from the business entity into the to the individual owners of that entity. And that's where, if you're talking partnerships, that business income then gets passed through to the individual partners. S-Corps, it'll go to the individual shareholders. And it's generally going to be based upon the ownership amount of individual shareholders or partners. So if a partner owns 20% of the business, they'll generally get 20% of that dispersed profit. And that's the key concept here, is why we call them refer to these as pass-throughs, is while the entity kind of determines that amount of income, once you have that income amount, it then gets passed through to the individual owners. The owners then pick up that income, and it shows up on their individual personal income tax returns. So it's business income that flows through to the business owners and shows up in the personal income tax stream. Now, in terms of sole props, they're a little bit different in that a sole prop is going to be the entity and the taxpayer really viewed as one and the same. So it can be a little bit different where a partnership can have multiple partners, S-Corps can have multiple shareholders. A sole prop is just going to be that single individual. So it's really just directly connected to that taxpayer. Okay. So in terms of business income, the slide you have here is just to give you a sense how business income fits into the overall picture, I guess, of components of income that show up on the personal income tax return. So pointing to the table here, you can see these are the components of income, and this is for tax year 2018, which is the most recent year from which that we have published data. And something I should have mentioned up front is most of the information you're going to see here is going to be from tax year 2018. And this is referencing the published information that comes out of the research section of the Department of Revenue. So this is the published data from the tables that they make available on their website. And in many cases, this is going to focus on full year filer returns as well. But with that, in terms of the components of income in tax year 2018, this is the income that showed up on the personal income tax return. And we can see about 64% of the total is wage income. From there, we have retirement income, and then we get to the category on business income, which makes up about 11% of the total amount of the income that's on personal income tax returns. If we look a little bit by source, that's what these next two charts here, we go into the Schedule E income. About 230,000 tax returns have Schedule E income, and then sole proprietor income, about 300,000 returns are reporting some level of sole proprietor income. One thing to note on sole proprietors that's probably important to keep in mind is sole proprietors can really capture a lot of different business entities. Mm-hmm. So you can have a business entity that has employees, and maybe has a high level of business income. Sole proprietors would also be including the example that came up in house revenue, someone who's selling on Etsy. And so they're making a small amount of income. That would show up as a sole proprietor as well. Independent contractors will often show up as a sole proprietor as well. So there can be quite a range in the sole proprietor category. But on the Schedule E income, this is what's referred to. Schedule E is the schedule that pass-throughs and partnerships actually use to report their income when they file their taxes. So we'll often refer to it as Schedule E income. Most of the income that you see here, this $10 billion, about 85% of it is coming from pass-throughs. There is about 15% that's coming from estates or trusts or rent or royalties. So that'll also be an example of like someone who has a rental property is earning income on that. That could show up on the Schedule E. And again, referencing the published data, it does get grouped together, but I did want to share that most of this is represented, does represent the pass-through income. So S-Corps and partners.
Yes, that's it. Good. Cross your arms, give me a twist. Excellent. Back. All right, right there, all you. Let me have it.
So then focusing a little bit on the business returns, the first chart you have here on this slide is the number of returns with the source of income. So the blue bar you see here, this is total returns. And then the orange color is Schedule E, and then sole proprietors. And so the way to view this is it's more or less categorizing by AGI different returns. So in this case, this would be if you basically sorted all the returns by AGI of zero all the way up to the highest return, it would categorize them. This would be the first 60% of returns from the lowest AGI up to 60%. And the way to view this is really just to get a sense as you get up in these higher percentages, the top 1%, these are going to be returns with higher income, tax returns with higher income. And initially, you can see that here's the total number of returns of those. There are a number of those returns that have Schedule D and sole proprietorship income, but there are plenty of returns out of this over 1 million thereabout that don't have any business income on those returns. And that's maybe a key thing to keep in mind where there are most returns that are filed, most tax returns aren't going to include any business income. But again, as you move up that AGI amount, you start to see more and more returns as a share that have that business income. And that's really what this next slide has for you here is really focusing on those returns that do have business income. Again, working with that same taxpayer AGI perspective, we can see in the first column chart you have here is the percent of returns with income from the source. So again, as you're moving up, the takeaway here really is as you're moving up the AGI, so as a return gets in that higher income amount, you can see there's a higher percentage of those returns with business income, whether it's Schedule E income or sole proprietor income, which is the purple bar here. So if you're looking at the top 1% of AGI earner returns, nearly 70% of those have Schedule E income reported on those returns. That's kind of the way to read what you have in front of you here. And then if we look in the next chart here, is rather than looking at the number of returns, this is focusing on the source of the actual income. So again, maybe the takeaway from this chart is you can see as for Schedule E income, there's more and more concentration of Schedule E income at the higher income returns. Where sole proprietors, it doesn't work quite the same way where that does start to go down a bit. Now, again, these categories aren't equally, don't contain the equal number of returns. But really the idea of it behind this chart is just to show some of that concentration of that business income. Okay, so in terms of business taxation, two things I wanted to highlight. The first is related at the federal level. So there's a federal qualified business income deduction. This is the 20% deduction some of you may have heard of. Oregon's not connected to this. This is a relatively new provision that was passed as part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act a few years ago at the federal level. Oregon disconnected from that, but what it does at the federal level, it's still available. It provides a 20% deduction from this pass-through business income in some cases. Now, there are different limits, income limits, and by the type of businesses that can qualify for this. But nonetheless, it is out there and available to pass-through entities to receive this deduction. And so a deduction just would remove some of up to 20% of that income from taxation. Now, again, this is at the federal level. Oregon's not connected, but I just did want to highlight it because it often comes up in the discussion of pass-through entity taxation. Now, for Oregon, Oregon has a policy that might have some of that overlap in the same taxpayers, but it does function differently, and that's Oregon's reduced rates for what we call as PTE income, which is pass-through entity income. And I'll go ahead and segue into a little more detail into Oregon's reduced rates at this time. Okay, so just describing the policy in general that Oregon has for the reduced rates. Before I get into the actual chart showing the rates, this was passed back in 2013 as part of the special session. The objective here was really to provide a more favorable rate structure for business income earned by taxpayers who are actively managing their own business. And that actively managing is kind of a key term, and that's the focus of Oregon's reduced rates for this pass-through income is for taxpayers that are actively involved in their business. So this doesn't pertain to passive income. So if you're just an investor in a business, you're maybe a silent investor, you're just an investor, you're not actively involved in that business's operations, you don't qualify for these reduced rates. So that's a key distinction. It is available to partnerships, S corporations, and also sole proprietors as well now. In 2018, another special session, sole proprietors were added to also potentially benefit from these reduced rates. I mentioned the not passive income requirement to materially participate. One other requirement is for the business entity to have at least one full-time non-investor employee, and that qualified employee must work at least 1,200 hours. So kind of recapping there, this is not passive income, it's only active income, and the business entity has to employ at least one person that meets those 1,200 hours requirement here in Oregon. But in terms of the rates, what I have here is, these are the 2018 tax rates and brackets. So this is based on the joint income tax rates. And these are the rates that were in place in 2018, which is the numbers you will see, the reporting numbers here shortly. So I'm using the tax year rates. A note in our current rate structure actually is at 4.75, 6.75, 8.75, and then 9.9%. But in terms of 2018, this was our standard rate structure. And then over here, we have the non-passive income tax rates. So the idea with this reduced rates is a taxpayer has the option, if they have that non-passive pass-through income, they can then apply these reduced rates to that non-passive pass-through income. The one catch, if you will, or one complicating factor possibly for the taxpayer is that when they apply this non-passive income against these reduced rates, the taxpayer can no longer use their deductions to offset that non-passive income. Having said that, the taxpayer can still use those deductions to offset any other type of income that's not this non-passive income. So if the taxpayer, if you're thinking of like an example of a joint filer who has one of the individuals on the return has this non-passive income and the other, the spouse, has wage income, then you can still, that taxpayer, because they're a joint filer, could use those deductions to reduce the wage income, and then this non-passive income could be applied to Oregon's reduced rates. So in that example, you would have the taxpayer would still benefit from their deductions against their non-business income, and they could also benefit from these reduced rates with their non-passive business income. So it really is going to depend upon an individual taxpayer, whether or not or to what extent they benefit from these rates. And it is something that taxpayers do work through when they file their taxes. So Oregon does have a form that basically has the taxpayer compute their tax under either scenario, with the taxpayer using the lowest tax liability. So they select, if they so choose, they can choose to take the reduced rates if it gives them a lower tax liability. There's no requirement that they have to. So a taxpayer, again, they will take what works best for them, but they do work through that calculation when they file their taxes. This slide here just goes into more detail of what I just explained about the opt-in, opt-out, and the use of deductions. I'll just skip past this one here. Okay, so getting into the most recent data that we have, again, we're working off of the published information for tax year 2018. What you have here in this table is you have the number of taxpayers. This is the number of filers. So this is 2018, and this is for everybody, so about 1.8 million. And then claimants here represents those that claimed and used the reduced pass-through rates. So in 2018, we saw about 25,000 returns where these reduced rates were utilized by the taxpayer. This is set up by income, so you can begin to see the share of claimants, and then also the column here would show the revenue impact. So the overall revenue impact for tax year 2018 for the full year filers here in Oregon was about $110 million. And you can see, again, there is some concentration here as well, where that revenue impact really becomes higher as you move up to the higher income groups. And again, that makes sense, as if you're applying this reduced rates against income, the more of this non-passive business income that you have, the more you can benefit from these reduced rates. Okay. Okay, so continuing on with viewing those that are benefiting and the revenue impact, the next slide you have here is just looking at tax year 2017 and tax year 2018. So getting a sense of what did it look like the year prior compared to the most recent. And we can see in terms of tax year 2017, it was about 96 million was the revenue impact, and now we're up to about 110 million. And part of this will reflect the inclusion of the sole proprietors that began with tax year 2018. I'll get into a little bit more detail on what that looks like from the sole proprietors, what their contribution is to this revenue impact in a few slides later. So I'll circle back to that. But just to draw that to your attention, in terms of claimants, we also saw a jump here from about 21,000 to closer to 25,000 from 2017 to 2018. And then the column charts you have down here is just displaying this information, but trying to display it in a different way for people that can see it in terms of a different way to view it visually. But again, it's the same information that's in the tables here. You can see again the claimants by income category and how that can become concentrated at some of that higher income amounts. And I should note, this income refers to total income. It's not just the non-passive business income as well. It'd be the total income on the return. Okay, so another way to view this revenue impact and how it breaks down the distribution, if you will, is to look at the actual tax reduction from these reduced rates. So the table that you have here is showing the tax cut, and there's a category of all the tax cuts. So this is the tax cut that the taxpayer received from using the reduced rates compared to if the rates didn't exist and what they would have paid without the rates. And you can see for about 19,300 of the total 25,000 taxpayers that benefited from these reduced rates, 19,000 of which had a tax cut of less than $5,000. So that was their benefit from these reduced rates. In terms of overall, that's about 27.2 million of the full 110 million. So it gives you kind of a sense, well, what's the tax cut that some of these taxpayers are receiving? And then we can kind of work our way down, and you can see as that tax cut goes up, you're definitely getting fewer and fewer taxpayers that are receiving that amount of the tax cut. And the tax cut, the reduced rates, the most they can reduce your taxes, because eventually the reduced rates do equal our 9.9% max rate standard rates. But the most you're going to get is it's a bit under $80,000 is where the tax cut max out. But you can get a sense of just where people reside. And it's definitely a high level of concentration numerically of the tax cut that's kind of at that lower amount, I suppose, as it's shown here in the table. And then again, the charts here are trying to visually show the same information so people can kind of see how that distribution falls out in terms of the number of claimants and then also the actual amount of the revenue impact. And again, as for those that have a tax cut of say less than 10,000, that represents about 90% of the taxpayers that took these reduced rates. In terms of a share of the revenue impact, though, that less than 10,000 represents about 45% of the revenue impact, just to give you some sense of the scale there. Okay, so this chart here is just giving impacts by county. I won't go through the details of this, but again, it's just to give you a sense. This is spread throughout the state. Of course, it's probably unsurprising that it's the use of these rates is more concentrated by taxpayers that are in the more populous counties. But again, there is a share throughout the state. There were three counties, I believe, yes, three counties that for disclosure issues because of the low count, they're kind of combined and included in this other category as well with others that have an out-of-state address on their return too. So. But again, this has the amount, the mean, you can get a sense of where this is throughout the state. Okay, so moving into the entity type to get a sense of, well, what was the effect of adding sole proprietors in 2018? And one thing that I just should note before going through the next couple of slides is one of the things we saw when this these reduced rates first came out and became available to the S-corps and the partnerships is in the initial first year, the use of the reduced rates was quite a bit less than what it was in that second year. So it was kind of a slow rollout or a slow uptick in use in that first year. So we will still, it'll be important to see what the 2019 numbers look like for the sole proprietors as well, if we see a similar kind of a similar thing happen for the sole proprietors. But that is something we hope to know more about in the coming weeks as the initial tax year 2019 data becomes available. We can see if there will be an uptick in the sole proprietors that we saw with the S-Corps and partnerships a few years back. But in terms of the share by entity, in terms of the count, of that 25,000, about 2,200 are related to sole proprietorships. From a revenue impact standpoint, it's about 5 million can relate back to that sole proprietors, and that leaves about 106 million then of the S-Corps and the partnerships. And the chart here is just showing that information, both the share of the total from a numerical standpoint, from a count of returns, but then also of the amount of the non-passive income, that's the blue bar. And it's fairly close. You can see sole proprietors make up a larger share by number of returns than they do by the income, which is gonna suggest that sole proprietors have, on average, are gonna have less of this non-passive income than the S-Corps or the partnerships, which is kind of in line with what our thinking was, where you get to some of those, the highest, the higher or the larger businesses with more business income, you're generally gonna find that more in the S-Corps or the partnerships than the sole proprietors. Okay, so then moving on to look at the passive entities by the sector. So this is gonna line up with the NAICS sector, which is just as a way to categorize the business entity and how they self-report on their returns. And again, these categories are used in other returns as well when the business is identifying where they fit. But there, I have two charts here. The first one is the share of the non-passive income by the sector. So this is the actual non-passive income that then gets applied to the rates. And I've gone ahead and sorted this from largest to smallest. So you can see in terms of the income that's being applied against these rates, the largest NAICS or the largest business sector is the construction sector, followed by professional, scientific and technical, manufacturing, and you can see how you work your way down to where this business entity fits in terms of the sector and how they identify. And then the blue column chart over here is the share of the number of businesses by sector. And again, there's some similarities. You can see construction again is up there near the top. But one you can definitely see in terms of if we do it, accommodation and food service, which is gonna include restaurants and in some cases like hotels and some of that, we can see that numerically, they represent about 10%, but they only account for about 4% of the income. And in part, that is why this average income, and this refers to their business pass-through income, the average income, this is the average income for that sector. So you can see, well, for accommodation food service, about 108,000 of that income that's being applied against those reduced rates. And you compare that to, say, wholesale trade, where on average it's 605,000. And that's where you can see that numerical count can be smaller in terms of a share of the overall income. Okay, so one additional way to look at this that has come up is the pass-through entities and the number of employees. So as part of when the pass-through entity, when the taxpayer files the return, they include this information of the number of employees that the business has, and that's where this information is coming from. And we can see what you have listed here is the number of employees for the entity categorized, and then have again the average income and the share of this is just the share if you're looking in terms of a percentage by the count. So this again is the share by income, and this is kind of a share by count of how many, if you're looking at the count of business entities that have one employee. And again, that is the requirement, is you need at least one. You can have more, but you need at least one. But you can get a sense of just the scale of these pass-through entities, and it is important. We started this conversation with some of the discussion of business entities, and C-Corps are often going to be some of the largest, but an S-Corp and partnerships and even sole proprietors can also be quite large in some cases. They can also be quite small. They can be that person selling on Etsy, but it can also be a larger business with over 200 employees as well. So it does give some sense of that the scale and how the difference in size of these business entities that may be utilizing these pass through these reduced rates for the taxpayers that are receiving income from the entity, I should say. Okay, and then the last slide I have for you here is just sort of a look back on the estimated impact and then the actual impact. So this got mentioned a little bit in the previous finance and revenue meeting. But in terms of the original estimate, this is looking at the for tax year 18. And this original estimate for the S-Corps and partnerships would actually be the estimate that was made back in 2013 when these reduced rates first took effect. So in this case, I'd love to take credit for it, but this actually was Chris's estimate. The original estimate was $106 million for tax year 18, and the actual is $106 million. So kudos to Chris for hitting that spot on there. In terms of the sole proprietors, this is the original estimate was in the 2018 special session. We were expecting to be about $11 million for 2018, and it came in about $5 million. And again, this is something we'll want to keep an eye on to see if there is an uptick in year two when this becomes available to sole proprietors. But as of right now, it appears that it came in at about half. And in terms of a numerical count, I believe we were thinking maybe upwards of 6,000 sole proprietors. And I think we're in closer to the 2,000 to 3,000 range. So the estimate missed in terms of number and then also of the actual revenue impact that came through. In terms of potential future adjustment, one thing just to note is when the legislature enacted the pass-through rates originally back in 2013, you can almost think of there was maybe two circuit breakers or two potential times where it could trip the circuit breaker, if you will, where LRO would compare the original revenue impact with the actual revenue impact as the returns come in. And then if the idea here was to if the actual revenue impact exceeded to a certain extent the estimated revenue impact, the reduced rates could be adjusted to try to account for whatever that greater revenue impact was than what was estimated. So those rates would be adjusted to try to put the actual impact more in line with the original revenue impact. And we've already done one of these lookbacks. It hasn't necessitated a change in the rates. As of the next time or the last time we would do this would be for tax years 2019 and 2020. And this is where the difference would have to exceed 25% of the estimate. So we'll see what 2019 and 2020 bring. But so far from the years that we have to date, it doesn't look like we'll trip that 25% and there would be a need to adjust the rates. But again, we'll see what 2019 and 2020 bring. But so far, well within kind of that error bound that the legislature put in place to require an adjustment to those rates. But with that, I know there's a lot of information in there, but hopefully that lays kind of the groundwork for more discussion to come and related to the reduced rates and also just business taxation in general.
This is a great presentation, Kyle. Thank you very much. I'm getting a. Are you getting an echo? Okay. Kyle, can you go back to the slide about federal jobs and that slide?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, you cut out there. Can you repeat that one time?
I'm getting an echo. Why am I getting an echo? Does anybody know?
I think it just got fixed.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what happened.
Did you cause that, Brian?
No, it's the snow. The snow stopped, so now you can talk.
Okay. I was asking if you could go back to the slide about the federal tax reduction for the, I always forget what they call it. Let's see.
The qualified business?
Yeah, income limits exist, limited availability for higher income specified service trade or business. Now, when you talk about the fields of health, law, accounting, consulting, et cetera, are those inclusions or exclusions?
Yes, Madam Chair, those would be exclusions once you get above the income limits, and it kind of phases out, but that would be the idea. If you're, I don't want to say a lower income business, but if you're below those income limits and they're not, you would be allowed to receive the 20% deduction. Once you get above it, that's where the fields of health, law, accounting could be removed or lose their ability to take that 20% deduction.
Because of their classification or because they got above the limit?
It would, Madam Chair, it's only for the businesses that are in that classification that are above the limit that lose that 20% deduction. So if you're not in that classification, you're going to be okay. If you're in that classification, you then have to check against those income limits.
Got it. Do you know what those limits are?
I could look them up. I want to say like 175 and 350,000 when it starts to phase out, but I can double check those and share that with the committee.
Okay. And then how do the reduced rates for pass-throughs compare to the corporate income tax rates? I know we've fiddled with those in the past. So how do they compare?
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm going to reach for a lifeline for Chris. I actually am not very good with the corporate tax rates.
The corporate tax rate, we have a two bracket at 6.6 and 7.6%. 6.6% up to $1 million and then 7.6% above $1 million.
Got it. Okay, Senator Riley has a question. You need to take yourself off of mute.
Thank you. For the question you just asked, the corporate tax has a lot more deductions available, I believe, than the personal income, which is where the pass-throughs are taken. Is that right, Chris?
Well, all the businesses, there are all the same kinds of regular business deductions that are available to all businesses. Payroll, inventory. So are you, so those should be the same across the business type. The credits might be different between the two entities. And then on the personal side, as Kyle was describing, you have embedded within that net personal or the net pass-through income are those regular business deductions, but then you also have Schedule A itemized deductions.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And it looks like the highest income taxpayers are the professional category and the construction. Is that correct? Yeah, they have a bigger share and a bigger income. And the professional scientific and technical would include, as the vernacular has it, suits and scrubs.
Yeah, Madam Chair, you can see I included the average income, which probably gives you a sense, although that could be the scale could be drawn by just a few of taxpayers with larger income amounts. But yeah, so we have, I believe I included the healthcare would be kind of what's referred to as the scrubs, I suppose. And the professional, scientific, and tech part of that would, depending upon how you categorize, I guess, suits, that category can be a little bit bigger and who it's grabbing. But yeah, so a portion of that is generally when we've looked at the suits and scrubs, would be that healthcare and then the professional, scientific, and tech.
Oh, okay. So both of those categories. Yeah. So the healthcare category is a bigger share of business. It's looks like it's tied for third with other. So the professional would include law firms and things like consulting, things like that?
Yes, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Other questions?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist.
Senator Boquist, you're on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, an observation. You're correct, Madam Chair. If you compare slide 7, which is the federal qualified business income that you were talking about, and then drop down to my takeaway for Kyle to answer later, which I believe is slide 16, you'll see that the professional, the scrubs and lawyers and all that, the reason the federal cap was there is they're the ones making all the money but have few employees other than themselves. But Chris, could you bring back to us as we discuss this in the future, if you look at slide 14, and that's the impacts by county, and then if you look again that farther down at slide 16, which is the incomes by sector, and then I suppose you could, you know, do something with 17, which is employees, but I think that's not there. But what I'm looking for is you to come, not make an observation today, but do a little research if we're going to discuss this further, which apparently we are, and try and identify what has happened to these sectors in these counties over the last year, given the lockdown, so on and so forth. Because you use the example, I point out, of accommodation and food service, which has been, you know, in a wholesale slaughter. But if you could bring data back to us so we made decisions that didn't negatively impact them, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I thoroughly endorse that. Thank you, Senator Boquist. Are there other questions from the committee? Well, this has been very helpful, and this is on OLIS for our further review, and we will be going back to this information this session. So I really appreciate your concise and clear presentation, Kyle. Thank you very much. Okay, Chris, do we have an, I'll close the informational hearing. Chris, do we have bills to introduce?
We do not, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, that completes our business for the day then. And thank you, committee, and go out and play in the snow. Let's all build snowmen and put pictures on Twitter, okay? All right, thank you, everyone. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.